for the light to shine so brightly, the darkness must be present. You are listening to Dark Sun Rising.
The opinions expressed by the host and guest do not represent the opinions of PowerX Radio Network, its affiliates, or its sponsors. Some content may not be suitable for children or sensitive listeners. Please listen at your own discretion.
Lend me thy light through death's veil till we have heaven in sight. Lend me thy light through death's veil till we have heaven in sight.
All right, and I'm starting things off a little bit differently tonight. You're listening to Dark Sun Rising on the PowerX Radio Network, broadcasting live right outside of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. I am Eric B., and I know as soon as you hear Dark Angel, Lend Me Thy Light, and then I sort of bring in tonight, oh my God, what a guest I have for your enjoyment. We're actually kicking things off with this band called The Dwarves. The song is We Must Have Blood. Let me just fade this out real quick. Oh, it's going to be one of those great shows. Oh, the days that I remember growing up in the punk movement up in Boston, going to this small crap hole of a club called the Rat Skeller right in Kenmore Square, which is right up the road from Fenway Park. And like I said, hearing bands such as, and you probably know none of these, but I'm going to say them anyway, because these are when music was actually on a cassette tape and a 7-inch record, which probably most of you listening to the show have no idea what the hell I'm talking about. Bands like G.G. Allin, The Mentors, X, The Germs, Dead Kennedys, Circle Jerks, The Exploited, The Ramones, The Cro-Mags, The Casualties, Pennywise, The Meat Men, Caius, Suicidal Tendencies, DRI, those dirty rotten imbeciles, and The Bad Brains, just to name a few. And so those of you who are Googling, wondering what the F is this guy talking about, that's sort of like your homework assignment. Wrap up on those folks. But I bring in yet another legend, and it's only a small reason why I had him on the show. We're going to look up this band called The Dwarves. What a great band. You'll probably recognize the bass player because he's sort of made a resurgence as of late as part of a band called Queens of the Stone Age, which I know you've probably heard on the radio, that song called No One Knows. And then essentially, like, do your homework. But tonight we're not really talking about music, all of it. We're talking about just a slight bit of music. And it's funny, I'll mention this and then we'll go right into the show. I remember the days when you wore combat boots and you wore Converse All-Stars, Chucky Taylors, because it was the cheapest thing you could afford, frankly, if you were dirt poor like me, growing up, you know, a white kid in the suburbs. And then the preppies had to sort of ruin it, and then all of a sudden they went into all the different stores, and now you can get them in every single color under the rainbow, and they cost like $50 now. I remember when they were like $10, you can get them in white and maybe black, but I think somewhere along the line they came out with red and blue, and I basically got the white ones and I colored them myself. So I heard my guest chuckling, literally, and so he knows exactly what I'm talking about. Back when punk was punk, because you just wanted to spit in the eye of authority and just, you were too poor to really have money to afford real clothes. You made them up and they looked cool. Now you can get them at the mall made that way, which sickens me to this day. But that's a whole other story. I'm kind of feeling my age. But here we are in Dark Sun Rising. My guest tonight is Vag Moore. And yes, drummer for this awesome band called The Dwarfs, but also a writer and author. And he writes some great stuff. And some of the subject matter that he writes about completely blew me away when I was sort of reading this. And that's what we're going to get into, sort of like a cult, but things to sort of stir that gray matter in between your ears. It's definitely not used just as a space heater. So, Vag, thank you so much for being part of Dark Sun Rising tonight.
Certainly, no problem. Yeah, no, that was great. Wow, you just brought me back. Holy crap. I'm at Boots and Converse. Yeah, I still have both.
Yeah, it's funny because mine literally, as you know, like right along the rubber sole where the canvas meets the sole, they usually wear out and your feet come right out of them. Mine are long, long gone. I just don't want to shell out $50 to $60 to get a new pair.
Well, back when I was making when the Dwarves were at their peak and I was making some cash, I actually bought a pair of actual black leather Converse.
Nice.
That's when I felt like, okay, now I've made it.
You know? There you go.
That lasts for a short period of time. But yeah, it was. I love those shoes. Oh my God, I wore them until they fell off my feet, literally.
Oh yeah, those were definitely the days. And like I remember having like my dungaree and leather vest that I put my safety pins in all by myself, one by one. You know, put my patches on the back, and like I said, those were the days. I can still remember slamming around in the mosh pit. You know,
yeah, the old mosh pit. Which now, oh my God, we sound so old, don't we, Eric?
I know. How about that one?
When you look at the pit nowadays, it's like, what are these young limp-wristed pussies doing? They have no idea.
Absolutely.
Back in the day, when you'd be in a pit, you could lose a tooth, you could break an arm, there could be some serious problem.
Absolutely. That was half the fun, though. Usually I was drunk off my ass and didn't care, but my God, at the end of the show, you're like, damn it, you know, for that $10, I got my money's worth.
Yeah, you know, damn, God, man, when I was seeing, like, I was able to see for $5 the Dead Kennedys, TSOL, Bad Brains, and Wasted Youth all together on one bill, and now today people just blink their eyes and go, no way, you did not see that.
Yeah, now
yeah,
it's
back then for $5.
Those were the days, Dead Kennedys, Rioting the Unbeatable High, Holidays in Cambodia. Oh, man. So, and we could talk about probably music all day, but that's not why people are tuning in. We're actually going down into the darkness. We're actually talking about something with a little more intellectual heft, but damn, I got some great songs.
Yeah, you know, we all have to move on. We either move on or we just, you know, continue to think about the old days. And I've never done that. I've always moved forward, so, or tried to.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. So let's sort of get into... I'm sure tons of people are going, what the F are these two guys talking about? But that's all part of it, is learning something new. So Now, in terms of music in general, whether it's you know, hardcore punk or if it's like death metal or dark wave or something, do you find that it sort of conjures up a certain type of energy that can be used, I guess you can say, for lack of a better term, like magical purposes? It's basically something to elevate it beyond just sheer entertainment.
Yeah, no, absolutely. In fact, I think that I would not have reached, you know, the small level of initiation that I have in terms of magic and spirituality if it hadn't been for the most deep, dark, animalistic elements that I lived through by growing up in the punk scene and also living it through the Dwarves. I mean, if you, somebody who I've been watching or reading about and studying my entire life ever since I was a teenager is Aleister Crowley.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure your listeners have heard of him. And, you know, as the years went on, I realized that there is an ordeal, the Nephesh ordeal, or the Ordeal X that you go through in Crowley's system of the AA, where it initiates you into the higher system, and you have to go through essentially sex, drugs, and rock and roll.
Nice.
What it does is it stirs up the kundalini, it stirs up the energy, it stirs up the astral forces, and if you do it properly, which apparently I did, then you reach sort of a higher plane, or you move forward instead of just sitting in that place, that animalistic decadent place. You actually do move forward, and something that has happened to me, and that's what my book Thonic Prose and Theory is all about, and what my new book Neonic Monsters A Perfect Ruin is all about, and what all of my books are going to be about as they're going to be published as the years go on.
Nice. Now, since you mentioned that, I'm going to put your website into the Para-X chat room. I encourage anybody who's listening, click on that and go right to your website to look at those books. And also, I do want to mention, if anyone wants to call in, please do. We have listeners literally from all over the world listening to this program tonight. It's 610-616-2114. And then after the fact, this show will be available on download at darksunradio.com. Now, since you were mentioning your website, it's www.vagmore.com.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Easy breezy. All right. Now, in terms of Crowley, you mentioned, you know, that sex, drugs, and rock and roll, you know, was sort of like the tool for enlightenment. That sounds like a great weekend. Pretty much every weekend should be that way. In talking about, let's say, sex, obviously we'll keep it PG-13, bordering on R. Now, it was yoga breathing with, obviously, sexual relations, with male being, what, like Shiva, and female being, was it Shakti, if I'm pronouncing this correctly?
Shakti, yeah.
Okay, and then you mentioned,
but in Crowley system, it would be Nuit and Hadit.
Gotcha.
Okay. Nuit is the female version, and Hadit is the male.
Gotcha.
And also like another system that I'm involved with is Voodoo Gnosis from Michael Berthiaud.
Mm-hmm.
Michael Berthiaud was an absolutely brilliant man, still is, still publishing books, and his whole system really helped, I think, energize all of magic. And same with Kenneth Grant. Kenneth Grant and Michael Berthiaud really helped energize and make magic for bad boys again, which is what Aleister Crowley did in the beginning. And it sort of got, it sort of became, it became lame for a while. It became almost too acceptable. And then people like Michael Berthiaud and Kenneth Grant made magic dangerous again, which it should be, because your deal that you have to go through in order to evolve spiritually, I believe, are very dangerous ordeals. I mean, they're very, they really challenge your strength. They really challenge who you are, and they can tear you. These forces can tear you apart if you're not prepared properly for what's coming. But if you can work your way through these energies properly, like I have, and like somebody like Michael Berthiaud has, or Aleister Crowley, or Kenneth Grant, or my friend David Beth as well, then you can reach a higher plateau where you realize that that was all energy that was needed at the base to raise you up. And that's what's, for me, Thonic has always meant. And that's why I have a band called Thonic Force, and that's why my first book was called Thonic Prose and Theory. It deals with all those energies.
Nice. We'll definitely listen to some of that on the commercial break. Now, in terms of the sex, essentially it's male and female sort of polar energies coming together, and then obviously then sharing, I guess, what you can call the sacrament, I guess you could say. So that's essentially is the key, correct? The male and female combining into one?
You're talking about the secretions.
Yes, the secretions, yes.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to reach that point in order to essentially be doing it correctly.
You have to go through what is called, in Crowley's AA, they call the Nefesh ordeal, or from the particular Islamic brand that I come from, it's called the Ordeal X. And it's an ordeal where in the Kabbalah, we're now living in Malkuth. And Malkuth is like your basic earthly plane. And in order to move to the higher plateau where you can actually see more subtle energies and feel more subtle energies, you need to go through the Ordeal X or the Ordeal Nefesh. And that means that you have to confront what Carl Jung, I'm sure many of your listeners are familiar with the analytical psychologist Carl Jung, he said you have to confront the shadow.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the equivalent of the Ordeal X or the Ordeal of Nefesh in AA. You confront the darkest elements of yourself and actually feel the current of this incredibly animalistic, violent sexual energy, which comes from the Freudian id. Freud talked about the id, and the id is something, is a realm in our subconscious that houses all of the things that are considered bad, evil, and horrible according to society and societal standards. You have to confront those things, and once you do that, you open yourself up to a whole realm of energy, sexual, violent, animalistic energy. You can propitiate yourself correctly through that and get through it without destroying yourself, then you can reach the next level. And that's when you start seeing the more subtle energies. So I know you keep bringing this back to sex, and you should, because that whole realm right there is deep sexuality. And in fact, Michael Berdiaux called that realm the transcendental id. It's sort of a cosmic libido. And if you can get through confronting your shadow and tap into this cosmic libido, or what Michael Berdiaux calls the transcendental id, then you are well on your way to I guess you could say, quote-unquote, a higher level.
Wow, very well put. Now, in terms of let's say, music and dancing and, imbibing some spirits to lift your own, now, is there... There isn't a certain system that you have to follow in terms of what you're listening to, dancing. It's just more of the opening you up to the freedom and more the experience, correct?
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of, you could say it's wine, women, and song, or mm-hmm. sex, drugs, and rock and roll. Either way, to get through it, you need to tap into this deep sexual energy and experience it, and utilize drugs and alcohol to experience it as well, and also rhythm. Rhythm is very important. The whole rhythm of music. It could be Wagner, it could be Rolling Stones, or the Dwarves, for that matter,
Right.
But sex, drugs, and rock and roll, you have to go through that, and it's sort of an ordeal that the true initiate must go through, like a very severe ordeal,
right,
in order to get through it and to pass on to the next stage.
Right. And one thing we do have to preface, obviously, drugs are illegal, so we're not promoting you use drugs. It's just merely we'll call it an intellectual exercise.
Hey, I live in Denver, so some drugs are legal.
Excellent point, yes, which is amazing in itself. That's for a whole different show. Now, and you're very intuitive to point out that, yes, we're not suggesting, sex, drugs, rock and roll, that's what you should do every weekend, and somehow you reach this intellectual, stimulating, higher level of enlightenment. No. It comes with, as you mentioned, a lot of practice and a lot of time and a lot of study.
Yeah, no, I should probably preface all that with that. I've been studying magic and mysticism ever since I was about 12. For some reason, I was drawn to the works of Aleister Crowley. I didn't understand a word of it, but I kept on forcing myself to try to get through the veil of this misunderstanding or his work. I couldn't get it, but for some reason I was uncontrollably drawn to try to understand it. And so it took many, many years. I mean, it took me from my 12th year of age all the way to, I guess I could say I didn't really quite completely understand it until my late 30s or early 40s. And I'm 46 now, and it took a lot of intense intellectual study, a lot of intense experience, a lot of delving deeply into ideas. I mean, I studied Buddhism, I studied Hinduism and Tantra and everything. I put myself through an amazing program of study and trying to understand this stuff, while at the same time living, the sort of rock and roll, sex, drugs, and rock and roll lifestyle that you'd imagine somebody like me would live. But yeah, it wasn't just mindless. There's nothing mindless about it. You have to be completely focused, and I was drawn instinctually to all this stuff. I was drawn intuitively, and I had no choice. It was something that just presented itself to me, and I always have followed my instincts and my intuition my whole life, and it's led me to this place where now I realize I never made a wrong step.
Mm-hmm.
I never made a mistake. I've always been following exactly the right path. But, there were some times during the whole thing where I thought, I might have gone off the brink at this point. But no, But that doesn't mean you should mindlessly follow just doing drugs and having sex. No, there's a lot more to it. I mean, if you just mindlessly follow that shit, you'll end up like Johnny Thunders or Kurt Cobain or something like that. I mean, it's...
Yeah.
There has to be a higher level of understanding of what you're trying to do.
Right.
Or maybe I should say a higher instinctual understanding, because it really is very instinctual, all of this stuff.
Right. You definitely don't want to be a mindless piece of meat and end up, like, you know, 6 feet under pushing up daisies, you know, or swallowing a bullet for lunch.
Yeah. Exact opposite. I mean, a true magician, a true initiate is not a mindless piece of meat. That's, you know, the exact opposite. You are a... I'm very much a fan of the work of Friedrich Nietzsche.
Mm-hmm.
He talks about the Superman and the Uberman and the Ubermensch. But, you know, obviously that has nothing to do with race. I mean, if anyone today now has read Nietzsche, they understand what he was talking about, something that had to do with superior, enlightened individuals, had nothing to do with race or German or anything like that.
Right.
But, magic and what Crowley and what Bertillo and Kenneth Grant and all these people have been talking about all these years is creating this Ubermensch that Nietzsche had an intuition of way back in, you know, the 1800s. And it's an enlightened individual, incredibly intelligent, enlightened individual who puts himself through certain ordeals in order to evolve.
Very well put. I have a couple questions that sort of popped in into the chat room since you started talking. Was in terms of at what point in your spiritual development did you realize the change from just I'm learning to wow, I can really tell a difference?
Probably like when I was 22. I could tell something was happening. This was different. There was a different kind of energy involved. But I've gone through all sorts of weird plateaus and all sorts of things since then. Now I'm 46, and probably around my mid to late 30s, I really realized that I was onto something. And now it's just been, since I started writing, really being instinctually forced to write books, like something inside me forced me to have to write these books. That's been ever since probably 2007, 2008, that I really realized, okay, this is real. This is a change. Something is happening here.
Right. I mean,
and
saying
my whole life is now dedicated to sort of representing that in my books or my music.
I mean, definitely when you read some of the excerpts from your book and you can actually look at a few on your website there, I'm a student of psychology. That's what I have my professional background in is in psychology. And yes, it's definitely what you would call pure it. If you want to go for, like, you mentioned Sigmund Freud, you know, earlier in the program, it is absolutely just
totally
just pure it. It's like someone just literally just cut your head right down the, you know, down the middle, cracked it open, and it plopped right onto the page. Do people, I mean, people like really probably get pissed off that people are just that open and honest, right?
It's been strange, and maybe the people that are angry, you know, maybe people that read what I write and get angry just leave me alone or are too afraid to talk to me. I've got nothing but positive feedback. I mean, I guess maybe especially when people read interviews with me, which there are plenty of them on my website,
mm-hmm.
where I'm explaining what's happening. I'm not saying like, hey, I'm just trying to get a nut off and do as many drugs as possible. It's like, no, there's a method to this madness. There's something going on here. And I'm tapping into it. And I think people like Michael Bertillo and his book, The Voodoo Gnostic Workbook, and Aleister Crowley and everything he's ever written, they're showing that this is something that happens to the human animal when they reach a certain level. And certain members of the human race tap into these things and experience them. And I think this is the next stage for humanity. And I'm a very optimistic person because I do believe in Nietzschean Overman or Ubermensch. And I should say that, you know, I think it's man and woman.
Mm-hmm.
Nietzschean Overman and woman. Crowley Thelemite, man and woman. Bertillo, Buddha Gnostic, man and woman can all evolve. And that's going to be our next step. But we're going to have to go through a lot of ordeals before that happens.
Oh, absolutely. I pray that I call it humankind evolves, you know, from knuckle-dragging Neanderthals up to, you know, something a little bit better, you know. Now, when you were looking at different religious systems, you mentioned about studying Buddhism, it must have been amazing to see the common threads through many of the religions that you would consider, you know, spiritual enlightening, where it's, you know, the joining of sex, using music and other things to sort of raise your vibration to meet the gods and sort of intertwine. It must have been amazing to see it. It's not just, you know, people say, oh, it's all Satanistic and you're, you know, cutting off the heads of goats, but it's Buddhism, which is considered light and fluffy and loving, and they all have common threads, yet they kind of get to the same place.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, but, you know, there are various elements of Buddhism. I mean, I'm forgetting the name right now because I'm studying a whole other group of things with the book I'm writing right now, but there's, I guess it's more like a tantric element of Buddhism that is very close to Thelema and Crowley, and in fact, Verdio and Budan Gnosis. And that does, I think the big difference is, I always say this, I do believe in the new Aeon, the Aeon of Horus. There's a new sheriff in town, and there are new rules to follow. And whereas, like, say, some old Buddhism would say we have to go for the final liberation and completely destroy our normal consciousness and destroy any sense of awareness at all after that, anything even maybe that might be eternal, that to me has gone by the wayside. I think with somebody like Friedrich Nietzsche, he first started saying, hey, no, we need to love life and enjoy existence. Instead of trying to turn away from actually living life and living existence, this needs to be a new spirituality that embraces it and embraces the idea that, like Crowley says, or like Verdio says, we reincarnate because we each are eternal stars. Crowley called it the holy guardian angel. Verdio called it the maître te. It's something that's eternal in each one of us, our star that carries on, and instead of trying to do the final liberation and wipe that out and erase it, we need to embrace it, try to tap into our authentic, real self, and keep on living every incarnation that we can. Because existence is brilliant and it's beautiful. We should enjoy it, all the pain and all the agony and all the violence and all the love and everything. And that to me is what is so brilliant about Budan Gnosis or about Crowley's system, Thelema, and why I love Friedrich Nietzsche as well, because he says the exact same thing.
Wow, very well put. You know, live life to the fullest. Absolutely. That's, I guess that's sort of like the mantra that I live by, but it's kind of odd because it's in our today's society, it's we have people who live that way, but then you have so many people who are, you know, the oppressed. They have the chains on. It's like you can only do so much because you don't want to hurt anyone else's feelings. It's like, no, you should be in it for yourself as long as you're not harming other people.
The most important thing to me, I believe, my own personal belief, and everyone should have their own, but you just need to find your authentic self and live your authentic life to the fullest. If you tap into your authentic self, then I believe you live a very productive and brilliant life that where you will have what Crowley calls the magical memory. Crowley said something like, what was a great quote of his, count your life, Count your years by your wounds, meaning live so strong with your authentic self and live so hard and just go, 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 and then you will have memories for your next incarnation so that you can remember, oh, yes, I was this person, and life continues on. The greatest thing that Crowley talks about is that in the Aeon of Osiris, which was the previous Aeon, which was the era where we believed that, you know, we die and then we go either to heaven, but we never come back to Earth. I mean, we're gone.
Mm-hmm.
With the Aeon of Horus that Crowley ushered in, the image is of the eternally shining sun. And that sun is each one of our souls, our stars, and it keeps on going. There's no dying and going away to some heaven where you can play harps with Lawrence Welk or something. It's no, you are living the life after life after life. And I think that Friedrich Nietzsche had an intuition of that, and that's why he called that the eternal return, which he probably didn't want to admit that he was essentially saying what the Hindus and the Buddhists were talking about with reincarnation, but that's essentially what he's talking about. But instead of thinking that's a bad thing, thinking it's a good thing, let's give me more. Give me more of that. I want to keep coming back. Let's keep living. Let's keep going.
Right. Very well put. And I'll say this one quick thing, and then we'll take a quick commercial break. You know, the strong obviously should flourish, and the meek should just wither and die. But for whatever reason, you know, today the strong, they're sort of shackled and held down and made to feel ashamed of themselves, and somehow the meek will inherit the earth. All I can say is WTF. We'll take a quick commercial break. When we come back on Dark Sun Rising, we'll hear a little bit more from my guest, Vag Moore. You're listening to the Para-X Radio Network.
Your source for everything paranormal. Para-X.
Name that sat on him was Death, and Hell followed with him.
Good evening, sir.
Good evening.
Password, sir?
Fidelia.
Thank you, sir.
You were listening to Dark Sun Rising on the Para-X Radio Network.
What you are about to hear
is very, very disturbing indeed.
All right, we are back on the PowerX Radio Network. This is Doc Sun Rising. I am Eric B., and thank you all for tuning in tonight. We have listeners literally from all over the world. So thank you all, including the United States, Canada, the United Kingdom. So again, thank you all for tuning into the show. My guest tonight, Vaj Moore. You may or may not know him as the drummer from the punk icons, the Dwarves, and but also an occultist writer as well as author. We're having a great time, so hopefully we're stirring that intellectual gray matter in between your ears and hopefully bringing you to a higher stage of vibration, and you can sort of, I guess, commune with the gods. Or at least just, you know, grab a drink, have a smoke, you know, crank up some good tunes, get into a mosh pit, and honestly just have a good time. That's all I ask. Probably once I get off this show, I'll throw on my iPod, and I'll just throw it down and have like a mosh pit for one, and my wife will look at me like, what the bleep is the matter with you? But anyway, let's get right back into the show. Well, one thing that, again, is funny, I keep, you know, joking about mosh pits and stuff, is I'm getting a little old, and I can't really do the pits as I used to. Like, when I was younger, it wouldn't matter. I would throw down in the pit on a Friday night and be, you know, basically dusting myself back off for work on Saturday.
And jumping off the stage when the Bad Brains are playing, and it's like no problem, and you land in that giant cesspool of people and that hurricane of humans. And
that was awesome. Yeah. I absolutely loved it. And
yeah, not anymore.
But not anymore. Now it takes me about a week to recover, and I'm thinking I'm black and blue and I'm done. And I think the last show that I went to, it was, believe it or not, it was like a kind of like a festival kind of show. And there's a few kind of more rocky bands that were sort of like towards the end of the bill, and there was some electronic dance music in the beginning. It was really just fluffy, fairy stuff, right? And these amateur kids, maybe 16, 17 years old, were trying to do a mosh pit to electronic dance music.
Oh, God.
Okay, now I had on Urban Combat Fatigues, a Slayer shirt, and combat boots. I was not happy, so I sort of joined in the mosh pit and let them know that I was not appreciating the music nor the mosh pit, and I threw a couple elbows, a couple of knees, a couple of windmills in there, and yeah, we made some stuff happen.
Well, the thing is, now with me, after all these years, I mean, now that I'm a celebrity, I suppose, whatever the hell I am. I normally don't have to even be in the crowd when the show plays. If I go see a band, I'm usually on the backstage drinking a tequila or, you know, hanging out, watching on the side. So I don't even have to deal with the crowd now. I guess that makes me one of the snobby elite.
The guys in the VIP section?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's all good, though. I mean, because people can be complete D-bags, though. If you do decide, like, you know, like it's kind of cool, like, some of the old school punk bands come around, like in Philly, like Pennywise was here not too long ago. So it's like some of the old schools, even like I saw Suicidal Tendencies the other day, I think on Fuse TV, they're still cranking it. And it's kind of cool watching the old schoolers do it, but it's just, I don't know, it's just kind of like, it just doesn't seem to be the same. It's almost like a nostalgia act instead of I remember us when we were like 19 and nobodies, you know?
Yeah, no, it's definitely different. I mean, like back when I saw the Dead Kennedys in the early days, or Black Flag with Rollins, or, you know, it was phenomenal. Not to say the Black Flag and those bands aren't phenomenal now, but I mean, like my friend Jack Grisham plays with TSOL, and he's now in Europe, wowing the crowds in Europe. I don't know if that's the first time that TSOL have been to Europe, but they're loving it. So it's like, you know, it's great to see videos on YouTube of people getting access to things like that. Because I remember when I would take like four hits of LSD and go see TSOL in 1982, and it was like seeing God. It was amazing.
Yeah, and absolutely. And I, like I said, my parents may or may not be listening, so I will not admit to anything. I plead the Fifth Amendment. I can certainly relate to those days. And what I was saying about you know, some of the newer crowd being D-bags is, like, when you went into the pit, it's like the you were on stage, but you were also sort of part of the show. Essentially, you were like the ringleader, or almost like the minister or master of ceremonies in this mosh, almost like controlled chaos. You know what I mean? It was almost like going to church in a sick sense, but nowadays,
well, I think it is. I think it's like I think it's like Dionysian. It's like dark Dionysus. You know, the Greek god Dionysus was the god of sex and booze and violence and love. I mean, he was like all these things together. And you know, I remember in those days seeing bands like the Circle Jerks.
Nice, yeah.
Incredible violence that would happen, but everybody picking each other up off the floor at the same time and knocking each other in the jaw at the same time. It's like, it was a Dionysian revelry. It was frenzy. It was Dionysian frenzy, definitely.
That's awesome. I think I'm up for priesthood. That sounds like a great church to me. But now, yeah. Nowadays, it's like if you jumped into the pit, people would just like grab you and just punch you just to be an a-hole. Not that it was just part of the energy. You know what I mean? It's kind of like just the flavor has changed a bit. I don't know what kind of went wrong.
I think it's not the same thing. I think people are just trying to emulate what happened before, and they don't know because they weren't born when it was happening. So.
Gotcha. All right. So let's talk about some of your writings. Some of these I picked up off of your website, and then I Googled you. I know that sounds like a personal thing, but I did Google you.
Ooh,
yeah. And so I found a lot of the interviews that you've done prior, whether they've been on radio, internet radio, magazines, you know, what have you. And and some of the comments that people made about your book and your other writings, what they found interesting. And I said, yeah, I kind of agree. Now, you had one writing about Charlie Manson and the god Shiva, and essentially the thought that man is not separate from nature. And I was fascinated by that. Could you, like, describe that a little bit to the listeners?
Yeah, well, I mean, man is not separate from nature, and man, I think man does have a divine element, a divine spark, and that divine spark is sunk right deep into nature. It's, you know, you can find that divine spark in the middle of a sewer, and you can find it up in the middle of the sun. You know, it's everywhere. And granted, I had written that article about Charles Manson probably 1992, and you know, there's a whole element there where we were really trying to find, like, a lot of interesting. It was almost like we're trying to project a lot of things onto Charlie that maybe weren't there, but so what? It pissed off our parents. But he did have a message even back then, and still does today, and that is that, and it sort of helped move me along in my spirituality. That, you can't find God unless you look to the beast. And that's one reason why I like Aleister Crowley so much, or even Michael Bourdieu, is that God is found sunk into the beast, the animal. We are all animals. Humans we share 99.9% of our DNA with chimpanzees. And I love that whole idea. My friend Boyd Rice had an album called God and Beast, and I thought that was such a brilliant title, and his liner notes were brilliant there too, where man is a god and man is a beast, and it's very true. And Crowley really emphasized that, because obviously he called himself the Beast 666, but it wasn't that he was saying, I'm this beast. He was saying, we're all beasts.
Right.
But we're also gods. We're Rahur Kuit sunk, or Hadith sunk deep into this beast, and you can find the god in the beast, and vice versa. And many people, like my one of my Platonic mentors, has told me that, as he ascended higher and higher into spirituality, he felt like he was at the same time sinking deeper and deeper into this animality, and that's always stuck with me, and that's always been a part of my spirituality. It's very interesting.
It is very interesting. Now, since you did mention Aleister Crowley, and obviously you can't be talking about Crowley without bringing in Anton LaVey from the Church of Satan. I've read his stuff extensively, and one comment that you made that I thought was interesting is you felt that, like, Anton LaVey put too much emphasis on ego. What did you feel that Crowley was focusing on if Anton LaVey was going towards ego?
I've always said that Anton LaVey served the function of expressing the exoteric of the Crowley esoteric.
Mm-hmm.
And that Anton LaVey was just as necessary as Aleister Crowley for our new age, for Aeon of Horus. And that it's a step towards tapping into your authentic self, which is your star, which Crowley talked about. Every man and every woman is a star, which means sunk inside this beast that each one of us is this eternal thing, which is specific to each one of us. But it is bigger than your normal everyday ego, but it's also a part of that normal everyday ego. Carl Jung called it individuation. And he talked about wiping out the inauthentic parts of your ego in order to tap into the authentic parts. So the authentic parts are what Carl Jung would call your true individuation, or your capital S self. And Aleister Crowley called it your true will, or your star. And I think that's a first step toward getting there, to understand your authentic self, which is a little wider and a little bigger than your ego, but is connected to it, is to follow somebody like what Anton LaVey was talking about, which was just embrace your ego and feel pride that you're a human, that you're an animal, that you should follow your desires. And I think for me, at least, Anton LaVey and his philosophy helped lead me to understand Crowley's philosophy more and led me to a higher place where I can see my more authentic self and my wider, more open ego.
Gotcha. Okay. Now, in terms of Godheads, I mean, what that seems to flow through a lot of your writing, and also a lot of the various dogmatic systems that we've been talking about, like the Order of the Golden Dawn. Essentially, what is the Godhead, and how do you get to reach the Godhead?
You got a mirror?
In the studio, no, but I'm sure I got one right down the hall. So
okay.
Grab
so
the mirror.
Go down there and look at that mirror. There's your Godhead.
Oh, actually, someone just pointed out there actually is a mirror in the studio. All right, let me go. All right, I get the mirror. I just have to stand. I still got the mic. Hopefully, I won't knock it into something else and break something. Okay, I got the mirror.
I'm breaking it.
So basically, we are all the Godhead.
We're all God. Yeah, we're all God. I mean, that's something that Anton LaVey said too, and that's what Crowley says. But Crowley and somebody like Carl Jung as well said that you sort of have to push away a lot of the inauthentic bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of it comes from society, from your teachers, from your priests, your churches, or whatever. But if you just sit still and quiet with yourself, you can tap into that real authentic self. And there are various levels of doing that. But at least for me, I think the Aleister Crowley and the Michael Burdio methods are the best.
Mm-hmm. Now, if we are, in fact, the gods, then who are we asking for help, or who are we trying to elevate to if we're already the gods?
Our authentic selves.
Authentic self, okay.
Yeah, it's like, consider that, think about inside of your chest there's a ball of flame, but sort of surrounding that ball of flame is a whole lot of dirt and mud and bullshit. Wipe away that dirt and mud and bullshit with whatever methods you can find. There are many out there. And eventually you will tap into your authentic self, that pure ball of flame that's down there.
Mm-hmm.
That's really the best way I can describe it.
It's actually, there's a book that I remember reading in college called Iron John by Robert Bly. It's probably like a brilliant description of what you just said, of going, you know, to doing just that, sort of sinking back into the earth and becoming one with earth and the darkness. Now, in terms of violence, now you mentioned that, like, violence is essentially it's a natural part of chaotic order, but it is part of it. And at some point along the line, it was labeled as basically evil, and that if you did violent act, you were labeled evil, but then you were also said to be controlled by an evil force, like somehow it wasn't your fault. So where did that happen, and how can we fix that to sort of bring it back into its will of natural order?
Well, I think that, and I would agree with Friedrich Nietzsche on this, I think it came from, and I hate to say this because I don't want to seem like a complete anti-Christian, because I think that the Gnostic mystical religion of Christianity was right, and it's not really very, very separate from what Crowley or Burdio were doing. But the idea that Nietzsche talks about, especially in the Antichrist, the weak played the greatest trick on the strong by convincing them that there's a God out there that considers their actions, the strong's actions against the weak, as being evil, and that's going to send them to hell.
Mm-hmm.
And that the weak were actually able to convince everyone that these very natural feelings or these natural energies we have are evil, and it's going to send us to hell. that's not true, then that means every animal that exists is going to hell. That means that, you know, every Christian government is going to hell. I mean, every government is a predator. And even if it's labeled Christian government, like our government or Britain or whatever, if you believe that all these violent acts are truly evil and it's going to send you to hell, then these governments are going to hell too. And everybody that's involved and everybody that contributes, and everybody that pays taxes, I mean, it's just ridiculous. These are natural energies that we have. These are natural instincts we have. We're animals. We're the beast. But we're also divine. You have to decide. Each one of us has to decide how we're going to utilize those instincts for ourselves. I mean, life is not safe. Life is not hermetically sealed and clean and easy. Life is dangerous, and think about how life was before civilization was erected and humans started coming up with all these moralistic ideas.
Yeah, it was absolute anarchy and chaos.
No, I think it was order. I don't think it was anarchy and chaos at all. I think it was complete order, and that order still exists. It's just that people feel guilty about what they do now if they subscribe to a particular religious belief. And right. I think that's ridiculous.
Right.
Each person has to decide for themselves how they're going to carry themselves in this existence. And that's really the best I can say. I'm not here to tell people that they should or shouldn't embrace this, that, or the other. I'm just telling people this is what I've done.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah.
And that's one of the number one things that Crowley said over and over again was, and it comes from the book of the law, is do what thou wilt shall be the whole of the law.
Yep. Actually, I have that right on the bookshelf right here in the studio.
Yeah, that thou is your authentic self. Do what thou wilt. Your will is your authentic true will, your orbit that you're supposed to be in. And so, you know, I can't tell anyone else how to behave, but I love philosophers like Nietzsche who sort of pull the veil away from all this hypocrisy and say, look at this.
Right. Okay. Now, we're coming down to the end of the show. I promise that I would give you this opportunity to sort of plug, promote, and advertise anything else you got going on. Now, first, let's your website. If people want to learn more about what you got going on and what you've done in the past, what's your website?
It's www.vadgemore.com, VADGEMOORE.com. And you can get, like, I update it whenever something is happening. Like, you'll actually find the news section that it says I'm going to be on the show, and here I am.
Woohoo! All right. And so you have your book. We sort of like looked at some aspects that are in your book. The name of your book. Now, can you get that just off of your website, or can you get it in other places like Amazon?
Well, the book has been sold out numerous times now, but it is going to be republished, and it's called Thonic Prose and Theory. You can find it on my website. You can see pictures of it.
Mm-hmm.
My new publisher who published this latest edition is called Aeon Sophia Press. You can find that on my website, too. And I'm currently finishing my latest book, which is Neonic Monsters, A Perfect Ruin. You can probably see that mentioned, too, either on my Facebook page or in this website. And, it's all right there. I mean, I'm all, everything that I do, gets put on my website and gets put on my Facebook page, and it's all pretty easy to find.
Very cool. Now, during the show, people did ask, like, WTF with the music. I love playing bands that no one's ever heard of. I don't like playing the same old crap that every other radio show plays. It's been that way since my college days. And obviously, like tonight, we played the Dwarves because Vadge was in the band. And the other music is also Vadge. For those of you who may not know, that was called Chthonic Force, which is more of like the dark, wavy, you know, kind of industrial electronic
and
stuff.
I pronounce it Sonic. Just C-H-T-H-O-N-I-C.
Sonic. Gotcha. Gotcha. Okay, I learned something new today. Now, how did you venture away from, you know, the hardcore, you know, West Coast punk into like dark wave kind of stuff?
Well, I'd always ever since I was a kid, even before I was in the Dwarves, like way before, I was into Throbbing Gristle.
Mm-hmm.
I was into Monty Kazaza. I was into Boyd Rice and Non. I was into all that stuff.
Nice.
And,
yeah.
And actually what led me to that stuff was Greg Ginn of Black Flag, his guitar solos.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I always loved Greg Ginn of Black Flag's guitar solos because they're so dissonant and noisy and crazy. And then when I heard Throbbing Gristle, I'm like, oh, this is like a whole band dedicated to that. And so I started listening to that and I always wanted to form a band like that, and I just always had sort of a vision of it. And then as my time with the Dwarves sort of started winding down and I started realizing, it's time for me to get out of here, then I knew I was going to have to do something like that. And I have, and I put out 2 full-length records, some singles, some various things that have come out, and we'll see. There could be some more coming out soon. We'll see. We'll see what happens. There could be some surprises with Phonic Force.
Very
but,
nice.
But you can find maybe 4 or 5 tracks on YouTube, and I believe all of my records and CDs for Phonic Force are out of print at this point, but keep an eye out, because things could be happening sometime soon.
Absolutely. One person in the chat room was like, WTF Throbbing Gristle? Yes, I'll put the name of the band in the chat room for you. That's like old school industrial, sort of, even before, like, you know, bands like, you know, Ministry sort of brought like a little metal to it. But yes, like
way before Ministry, yeah.
Yeah, that's way back. But like I said, oldies but goodie stuff, sort of like gothic industrial, very cool stuff. We've come down to the end of the hour. I could sit here and crack a beer and talk to you for hours, but unfortunately, the time has gotten away from us. I would love to have you back on, talk about books and music and all that other cool stuff. Hopefully you had a good time, though.
I did. I had a blast. It was great.
All right. Awesome. All right, man. We got to get rolling. So again, Vag, thanks so much for being part of the show. Next week, another great guest. And you did mention Black Flag, so why not tonight? We can have a TV party tonight. Those of you who like Black Flag know exactly what I'm talking about. One of my other favorite songs, Slip It In, which is like a Black Flag classic.
Oh, I love that one.
Yeah, it's not appropriate for radio, but those who are chuckling like, know exactly what I'm talking about. Old school punks unite. Anyway, this is The Dark Sun Rising. I'm Eric B. I'll see you all next week.
Your source for everything paranormal, Para-X.